It is indeed a pleasure for us to welcome you this morning. We have the agenda in front of us. On the agenda, we would like to go straight to item number 3, where ESCOM will be able to give us their annual report and financial statements for the year 2014-15. Without wasting much time, other members are leaving in a few minutes to go to attend other engagement in Parliament. We will request ESCOM through the chairperson to give us this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson Ikuo Mesa, Esther Siguwa, Honorable members of the committee, journalists from Business Day and other reporters. Ladies and gentlemen, we have here the following board members, the chairperson of the Board Center Committee, Mr. Koza, the chairperson of the Board News Program, Ms. Roshni Naidu, and of course, the CEO will introduce the executives. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to discuss our financial year end report and financial statements with you. We are committed to stabilizing ESCOM, re-energizing it, and creating growth value for the shareholder and for the nation. So I will hand over to the CEO. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Brian Muleta. I'm no longer 18.
Confirmed now. Yes.
And Rochin is the Chief Financial Officer, no longer 18. Mr. Abraham Masango, who is the Head of True Capital, is also no longer 18. Mr. Mongez Ndokolo, Group Executive Distribution, is not 18. Ayanda Noah, Executive Customer Services, not 18. Shota Sheo, Divisional Executive, and the Corporate Office, not 18. Fred Doe, Divisional Executive, Office of the Chief Executive, no longer 18. So then the young company secretary, the new company secretary, and Mr. Kuli Patiwe, spokesperson of ESCOM, is no longer 18. And Mr. Marcelo Bonero, Parliamentary Office, and Mr. Matua Koko, who is not there. Actually, Mr. Matua Koko is no longer a if I can go directly to the...
Before you go directly, let me, through Chairperson, we want to congratulate the ESCOM team. We no longer have the Hollywood actors. We really appreciate the confirmation of the leadership of ESCOM. And we want to congratulate you, and we put our hopes on you that indeed you will deliver the mandate of ESCOM to the people of South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, just to add that when we hear that, the results that the presentation that we're about to present is about relates to the period from the 1st of April 2014 to the 31st of March 2015. So we'll confine ourselves to that period yesterday, where I was really talking about postage events. In the year under review, ESCOM achieved EBITDA of 25.2 billion, which represents an EBITDA margin of 17%. We achieved internal cost savings of 9 billion rand, supplied electricity 96% on average. We had the availability of electricity. We managed to raise funding at about 49.5 billion. And subsequent to year end, the shareholder allocated 23 billion, which would assist us to close the funding gap and increase our liquidity pressure. Total expenditure for year 2015 was 53 billion. I believe this was the biggest single capital expenditure by an entity in South Africa during the year under the nuclear program added about 6,200 megawatts of generation capacity. We built 5,800 kilometers of transmission lines and 29,655 MVA substation capacity. Special Division 2005. During the year under review, 2014-15, we electrified additional 150,000 houses, homes. 159,853 homes were electrified during the year under review, and IPP capacity of 1.2 megawatts is connected and giving power to the but the word of the financial review, it will ask me some things to take to the financial review.
Thank you, Brian. For the year under review, we had a revenue increase of just under 7%, which mainly relates to the increase that we have had at 8% through the MYPP process. As a result of that, together with the PPP savings or the cost saving initiatives that we've been doing in the year, it's resulted in EBITDA of 25.2 billion, which, as Brian said, culminated in a EBITDA margin of 17% for the year. Due to the funding initiatives of the organization, as well as to fund the capital expenditure program of initiatives of 50 billion that we spent for the year under review, it resulted in a coverage ratio of 0.47 times. An increase in the debt to equity ratio of 2.37 times and gearing at 70%. All of these ratios would obviously be positively impacted post gearing by the equity injection of any equity that has been provided by the shareholder, as well as the debt to equity conversion of 60 billion of the subordinate loan. The next slide, Madam Chair, basically just gives you a view on the volume outlook and the revenue impact for the year. As you can see, volume were relatively stable at about 216 million gigawatts, 1,000 gigawatts. Operating performance in terms of EBITDA and EBITDA margin, you can see we've spoken about that already in previous times. Funding is, as we've spoken about, we've spoken about as well. About 49.5 billion were raised in the year, and there'll be further details in the slides coming this year to put the sources of the funding. From a solvency perspective, as I mentioned, the impact of the conversion of debt to equity, as well as the 23 billion equity injection, is reflective of this slide. As you can see, gearing basically reduces to from 70 to 67%, so it actually allows another 3% in terms of our ability to actually borrow on the international debt capital market as well as the local debt capital market. And the debt equity reduces from 2.37 times to 2.03 times. So the impact of the conversion of debt to equity as well as the 23 billion equity conversion had quite a significant impact on the balance sheet in terms of strengthening the balance sheet as a result of the shareholder initiatives. Madam Chair, for the year, as you can see, we've had profits of about 3.6 billion for the full year, compared to 7 billion in the prior year. This is the full income statement that's reflected here, Madam Chair, so this is basically just for the committee to note. From a revenue perspective, Madam Chair, we look at the electricity by volume, as you can see in terms of the graph. We basically looking at increases in municipal customers, commercial and agricultural customers, and residential customers, with a slight decrease from mining, international, and industrial customers for the period under review. Operating expenses, Madam Chair, increased at 13% in terms of cents per kilowatt hour for the year under review. The primary result of the driver of that increase, Madam Chair, was primary energy, and we'll basically look at the reasons as to why primary energy has increased on the next slide. But needless to say that the BPP program has actually delivered about 9 billion worth of savings in the year. That is just under a saving of about 1 billion a month for each of the 12 months of the financial year, which is quite a significant saving and achievement by the group. As you can see, Madam Chair, on slide 10, the impact on primary energy, which is quite a large chunk of the cost base of ESCOM, was primarily driven by the increase in IPP costs of 6.1 billion and the reduced coal penalty of 6.7 billion. Paying for those adjustments, Madam Chair, the increase in primary energy costs were being particularly in the increase in demand for that particular year. And Madam Chair, the balance sheet. from a discount perspective, we have a balance sheet with total assets of about 552 billion rand. That's about half a trillion rand in terms of the balance sheet. In terms of the total liabilities and equities, you can see we have borrowings of about 300 billion at this stage, and equity of about 100 billion. Madam Chair, just in terms of an update on the year ahead, obviously this is at year and post-year, and there has been significant effort in terms of both between National Treasury as well as DALGA to remedy the situation, and that the situation has improved quite significantly in terms of the year ahead, with the municipality, and we hope that the interactions that we had in the last 6 months post-hearing continues to bear quite a positive result going forward, which will obviously improve the working capital situation of ESCOM quite significantly. Now, if you look at the slide 14, which is the funding, as we said earlier, we have raised about 49.5 billion in funding for the full year. And the sources of those funds, Madam Chair, was domestic bonds at 12.4 billion, international bonds and loans at 21.7 billion, commercial paper 0.2, that net number, Madam Chair, DFI, which is Development Financial Institutions, of 10.5 billion, ECA, which is Export Credit Agency Financing, of 1.7 billion, and then DSA has contributed 3 billion to that 49 billion. For the new year, Madam Chair, we have about 5.3 billion that we need to raise. And again, sources of funding primarily will be domestic capital market, DFI, which is Development of Financial Institutions, ECA financing, and international bond issues. I will hand over to my speaker to how we operate.
So before we proceed on to the operating performance, I think I realize that the committee has a strategy of that is that has been introduced to people from the department.
Madam Chair, good morning. It's common cause that we have a aging fleet. Average age of our plant is 4%. Our energy availability curve has stabilized. We have improved on the number of unplanned grid operations. We've run the plant very hard, 83% load factor, which is 20% above the international norm. 83% of international loan for the age of the fleet that we're running is unprecedented program. So in spite of this age, we stabilize our technical performance on the generation side. We burn 119 million tons of coal. We continue to improve our performance for moving coal from road to rail. This is one area that, in spite of the tough environment of the year, that we never worried about the security of coal, moving trucks on the road, reducing the fatalities on the road because of the coal that gets transported by our trucks. Our port delivery performance on the technical side is actually one of the best here today, Madam Chair. If you look at the energy losses, we are showing a decline. Look at our interruption, the amount of time we disrupt our customers has improved from 37 to 36. Our safety, our systems interruption frequency showing an improvement. Overall, on the aging fleet for the port delivery side, I think it's very excellent for the We had 1,795 megawatts of renewables at a load factor of 31%. contributing very importantly to keeping the lights on. We have 5,701 megawatts contracted for the IPP. When we're very tight in the city, and we often get criticized for not supporting the RDPs, but they come in handy, they came in handy for us to keep the lights on. We continue to bring in capacity. We've brought 100 megawatts of solar. We've built 319 kilometers of transformation lines, and our transformation capacity is about 2,000 megawatts. Again, exceeding our expectation. You know, this is for us a very, very proud achievement, particularly for the post-apartheid South Africa, that we have effectively added 6,237 megawatts of new capacity that did not exist prior to 1994. And we can, in fact, I can quite confidently say that our build program then is beginning to give up. And so after this, it became a load as well and contributes to the life of it. We have the biggest transmission network that we cannot do appreciate, that the transmission network that we have in the system is one of the biggest, let alone in Africa, but in the southern hemisphere we're running a very extensive transmission network, and for technical performance to improve, as I showed earlier, it's quite remarkable. So I talked about our build program. I think we've had our issues in the past. The situation with UP, that's in the past. We built 100 megawatts of solar on the grid. UP City synchronized the load. And it's reliable. It's now, this week, we've been transferring that it's out. It's taking it off for post maintenance after synchronization that was planned. So we going forward, we are record to say that we will meet all our committed dates, unlike our previous history. We have a step change, we've made a step change, we know what we're doing, we've improved our program with our project management capabilities, we've got a stable leadership in the area of the business, so we're in a good space. Environment compliance issues, this is one area that I'm particularly proud of. Madam Chair, the number of conservations are declining. We show a good story here, but a lot of good stories are declining the environmental side. So if you look at, we're not proud that we have people that lose life in the course of doing this deforestation. So we can never say we're doing well in this area of the past. What we can say is that the number of fatalities are dropping, which shows that the efforts we put in protecting the life of our people as we do as homework. Fruit. We've improved the biggest financial year for 5%. We can only talk about improvement for straight improvement. Internal transformation and the pipeline, we had at one point we had 10,000 people that we shared. We had a robust pipeline. Our transformation is quite good. So again, we're very proud of the impact that we're showing here. If you look at our gender numbers, if you look at our racial equity, it's really in flux. ESCOM is no longer a DD-wide organization. It's very transformed. It's run by demographics that truly represent what South Africa is like. The chief executive in his opening address gave you the number of people that did not have electricity that were electrified in the financial year that passes, $59,000 to $260,000. This is the area that our chief executive has entrusted us to prioritize going forward. But we need to continue to eliminate the number of households that do not have electricity. We're spending our money on transport companies. We're driving the socio-economic transformation agenda for every cent we spend in the economy, and you can see in the numbers that we are showing.
Practice 1 presents the TSLA violations. We had fruitless expenditure of about 61 million, which is below the thresholds, the negotiation thresholds. We had losses to criminal conduct, 2 million, the regular expenditure of 12 million. Less condoned, the regular expenditure was 4 million. And this irregular expenditure that is awaiting condonation of 480 million. If I go to the next slide, Madam Chair, this is the actions that we are putting in place to reduce irregular expenditure. The initiatives, we are pursuing a more vigorous appropriate action against small business. And we are updating our PSMA procedures, including increasing our PSMA training and presence amongst the employees. We are also maintaining our PSMA reporting processes. For example, we have eliminated completely the payment by check and money of payment. Everything must be done on the staff. We are developing and implementing contract lifecycle management system. We are implementing data quality improvement projects for vendor material taking after the data cleanup. We are aiming on standard operational procedures and operating conditions, right, the functions responsible. We are also doing forensics and procurement training, fraud resistance assessment and compliance check have been done all over the organization. We are reviewing reviews by assurance and forensics. The adequacy of implementation of delegation of authority on the subject. Instead of unauthorized expenditure, the level of coordination and related disciplinary actions, and we are looking at the adequacy of the disclosure of conflict of interest and the adequacy of contract management processes. Fourth balance sheet, Madam Chair, I think the most interesting thing is that we are doing our maintenance a little bit differently. We said yes to the committee that we will strive to do maintenance with no load chain or minimum load chain. And Madam Chair, this just shows you the extent of maintenance that is going on as we speak and that is planned going forward. Like the red line shows you the point at which we'll begin to do load chain. If we do maintenance beyond the red line, we will do load chain. So we have managed to keep maintenance below the point at which we do roaching, and in fact we have drawn ourselves a black line, which we call the budget line, maintenance budget line, which we try not to breach because we have to be very clear between what we're doing in maintenance and the actual maintenance. And so if you look at today, which is the 4th of November, you will see that the Bombat Unit 9 is out for a general outage, more than 100 days, and Rila Unit 5 is out for a general outage, Matra Unit 4 is out for a general outage. Our Unit 4 is out for a general outage. Majuba Unit 5 is out for a general outage. Komati Unit 8 is also out until the 17th or 18th of December. And Camden Unit 4 is out until the 18th of December. Camden Unit 4 will be taken out for a general outage on the 17th of November. Quebec Unit 2 has been out for I think a 91-day outage. It is coming back on the 7th of December. I also out of maintenance, Arnold Unit 2, Matimba Unit 3, Ragensberg, which is our hydro scheme, is also out for maintenance, and Ajua Unit 3 out, Unit 6 is out for 21-day post-commissioning projects, and to come back on the 14th of November. So we're doing all that maintenance, and while we're doing it, we're doing it responsibly without any load shedding that is happening. And you will see, Madam Chair, that in December we'll actually step up our maintenance, because from experience, when people go on holiday, there is less consumption of electricity, and that gives us space to do more maintenance. And you can see on the table that has been provided that we will add quite a lot of units, and that will help us catch up to the backlog in maintenance. But we will do this without doing the shedding. If you go on to the next page, you will see that we have a plan until the 30th of April, and that we do not anticipate load shedding until the 30th of April. In fact, this goes on until November next year, and although May has broken during the winter, we at the moment are working on making sure that we can overcome those problems. The good thing is we know about when we are going to have problems, and we are putting plans in place to make sure that we avoid load shedding and problems while we continue making Today is 87 days of only 2.5 hours of load shedding. We only have 2.5 hours of load shedding in 87 days. And in fact, day number 50, absolutely no load shedding. I think that going forward, say, it will not be necessary to report the statistics, because shedding electricity will just become a normal thing. Okay, in conclusion, facing stability is very critical to re-energize and grow the company. We will continue to supply the country's electricity needs and do maintenance of our plants with minimal or no load shedding. Our medium long-term focus involves improving the performance of our plants, which is by increasing efficiencies and bringing online units that are under construction from the existing that in Golden during 2016-17. To alleviate the constrained generation system. And most importantly, the financial recovery of the company is going to be important. We will continue to drive internal efficiency and cost savings. We will focus on PSMA compliance. Hopefully we will report less PSMA contravention next year this time. And we will execute the 257 billion capital expenditure for the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. That is the story and the report to our committee. We hope that we have clearly indicated that the storm has been stabilized, is now being re-energized, and is going to grow to the benefit of South Africa, the people, the industry, and everything else. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and the presentation, the presenters of this beautiful story to tell, if I may say, without preempting the discussions. We will now allow honourable members to interact with the report. I will start with Honourable Mazoni, then she has raised her hand, and Dr. Liende will follow, Honourable Singh, Honourable Bama, in the order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to everyone at ESCOM for the presentation this morning. And it really is great to have the last one for such a long time, I must say. Chair, a couple of things. I noticed in the presentation that we saw greater energy losses. And there was a slight improvement from 8.9% to 8.8%. Can you just explain to me what these energy losses actually are and what our plans are to make sure that we go down to 0% energy loss? And there's been much controversy around the quality of coal that's been being procured by ESCOM and from the various mines that the coal is coming from. In fact, in the last week there was a story about a massive amount of coal having to be returned the second time for being below standard. Why is this happening? Why are we procuring coal that's substandard? We have to go through rigorous testing of our coal, but still somehow the substandard coal seems to be clipping through. So what are we doing to curb that and make sure the companies that we procure from are of the adequate quality? Then, Chairperson, I'm very glad to hear from gentlemen that we are online by our deadlines and we don't see any future pushing back of deadlines from reducing CO2. That's a great relief, not only to myself, but to the whole country. I just want to make sure the companies that have caused the delays, have penalties been issued against them? And are those penalties being paid, and are we getting funds in for the problems that were caused there? She had very good news when I saw 175 megawatts of renewable energy added to our grid. How are we encouraging and increasing IPPs to come on board? Because at the moment we don't actually have legislation that enables that. So we're pushing for the legislation to be passed through DPE to allow more IPPs to come online. Chairperson, also with these IDPs, nuclear, let's be honest, is the talk of the town at the moment with the $1 trillion nuclear deal. Can you have an indication from ESCOM as to what kind of renewable they are looking at themselves, not DPE, but ESCOM itself, and going forward, what kind of renewable energy can we look forward to ESCOM introducing into their grid? Two last points, if I may, very quick. I'm very glad to see a way maintenance has been done to stop load shedding happening, and I mean, that's very good news. I just need assurance from ESCOM that none of our big companies have been asked to reduce load to ensure that the grid remains stable while maintenance is done, because we wouldn't want to run from people to get to call. And I want to assure that our big companies are being able to operate at 100% capacity during these outages. And then share my last point. When the Auditor General came to report us, of course the frequent waste expenditure and the regular expenditure of ESCOM was their number one problem, and was highlighted in red, and we were alerted to this from the Auditor General as being the biggest worry in DPE in all our state-owned entities, because I think their amounts will all agree are huge and are unacceptably high. Even when one looks at the billions of rands that we're talking about, I think anything that is frequent waste or irregular is worrying for us. Especially considering that ESCOM has to ask noticeable increases, and it's very difficult for the South African public, as it is for all of us, to wrap our heads around the fact that we ask for increases, and yet these millions of rands are being put down frequently wasteful and irregular expenditure. Chair, the one particular thing concerned me, on page 51 of your presentation, where we talk about PSMA, non-compliance with PSMA. One of the things there, and it's the little triangle, says it includes the Back to Basics program, land purchase, breach of the PPFA, and the New Age Media. And there are 7,166 number of these incidents, and in total of 82 million rand. Now, sure, one can always understand that the Back to Basics program is part of the issue, land purchase, and people understand non-compliance law. But sure, this is for the New Age Media to be there. What exactly were we doing with the New Age Media? Because I can't understand that, and I need an explanation for that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just appreciate the presentation by ESCOM on the road that is already covered. Say to also appreciate the feeling of the critical force and the equity that we see prevailing in the institution, which is utterly giving us more hope going forward. Secondly, Chairperson, the presentation actually spoke to the ability of the institution to sustain the provision of electricity, of which is something that we need to protect. If one may ask as to whether there is a retention strategy of the available staff at ESCOM, Chairperson of the board, because the government has a responsibility to ensure that there is stability, and there will never ever be stability if there is no consistency in terms of sustaining the expertise that we have in current. Then thirdly, Chairperson, the CEO has spoken to the transition from road to rail. How does it benefit the institution? And if that is the case, is there any method that seeks to ensure that the total movement, the transition from road to rail, is actually improved and made to be the cornerstone of ESCOM? Then, lastly, certainly on financial. does the institution have a well-capacitated in internal audit? Because the strength of the internal audit is actually assisting the organization to grow in financial management method that will actually resonate well in the public finance management. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Mangwa and I decided not to go to the People's Forum, which starts at 10 o'clock, just because it's important to be here. So that's why we remain. Thank you very much. I also want to thank the presenters for the presentation that they've given us this morning. At least there's some light at the end of the tunnel. And we're glad also that load shedding seems to be something of the past. However, I think just following on Honourable Mazzoni, what one would like to know is, has there not been a reduction in demand by many of the major industries, realizing that load shedding was a problem? Have they not reduced their production lines? So that's something that you found. Because one notices that the main reason from the CEO would seem that the lack of maintenance contributed to load shedding. I'm glad that we've got a maintenance program that's going to be sustainable in the medium and long term. Chairperson, what I'd like to know is, and I don't know if the calculation has been done, there's always increases of support through NERSA, and you're not getting the kind of increase that you actually want. For every 1%, if you can answer, for every 1% of increase that you ask from NERSA, how does it impact on your revenue stream? How many billion or how many million does it bring into revenue stream for every 1% that the consumer is required to pay an increase? If that kind of calculation has been done. I'm looking at this because of your net profit situation of 3.6 billion rand, and I understand it has reduced from 7 billion to 3.6. So has that kind of exercise been done? The reason I'm asking that is there a need to continue fleecing those people who consume electricity? It's not only, and I see that the CEO sneered when I asked that question, but I think it's a genuine question, and we as public representatives, Madam Chair, have to ask this question on behalf of the people we represent. Because there's always an increase in electricity. And this also is increases in deposits, connection fees, etc., etc. Do those kind of increases also go to NERSA? Or is it something that you determine and just, if somebody wants electricity connected to the house, you say, well, pay 100,000 rand deposit, and then you, you know, then we can supply your electricity. So that's my first question, if you get an understanding.
Can I request Honourable Singh to withdraw the word fleecing? We don't fleece South Africans.
Well, that's the impression we get, Honourable Chairperson, from
is
the community.
Is it fleecing?
Fleecing.
Fleecing, oh, okay.
Fleecing means, you know,
well, I don't know my role.
That language or withdrawing or withdrawing.
It's
the language of the NA, National Assembly. Now, if that from is growing, don't tell us to have money.
I did say that's community perception out there. Then, Chef, there's a follow on Andrew Mazzoli, didn't you?
What is it?
I mean, it's unusual on our budget member to maybe want to correct our colleagues when making people. But much as the honorable member has indicated that we are all public citizens, it can be correct here for the honorable member to see this is the view of the public regarding the existing on the part of the community that this relates to the provision of the city.
So, what's the problem?
What is
the
problem?
No,
you can't tell me what's going on.
No, I think, what is the problem actually,
the honorable member is clear that we are public representatives,
yes,
and you have an obligation to represent the views of the public.
Yes.
And I do not agree with the notion that says the feeling of the public is that ESCOM is robbing people in terms of provision, electricity, of providing electricity.
Anyway, he was. There are so many interpretations and perceptions, whether real or unreal, all over. So I don't see an issue there. If maybe in his constituencies, then people feel that way. I mean, I don't see a problem. Eskom will clarify that we don't.
Okay.
Or we do.
Yeah, if Shepherdson also, in my own constituency, that is not the feeling, I will tell them, right?
Yes. Thank you. Let's proceed. Let's not interrupt him.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I never use the word robbing. In connection with the New Age breakfast, I noticed last week that there was an MTVPS presentation, and it was announced that Eskom was a sponsor. I'd just like to know, with each of these New Age breakfasts, how much does it cost a state entity like Eskom? What benefit does Eskom get out of being a sponsor for a minister presenting the MTVPS? I've also asked the minister that particular question in writing, but because you are here, you can probably give us the answer. Chairperson, there is an independent inquiry that has been cited on page 13 of the annual report, where four executives were suspended. The board of directors suspended four executives. Can you just give us an update? We know what we read in the paper, but I think instead of the paper from the horse's mouth, and I hope there's no point of order on horse's mouth, quote unquote. What has happened? Because there was a lot of publicity when those executives were suspended, and there must have been cogent reasons for them to have been suspended. But of late, we hear some of them are back, some of them are transferred in our department. So you can just give us a briefing from the side of the board exactly what happened there. Chairperson, the AG's findings, irregular expenditure. I note that under irregular expenditure, there's been an increase in the number of incidents from 2014 to 2015. If we could have a reason for that. It's increased from 354 to 606. The total of this is 1 million. But I think it goes down to the question of Honorable Vanguard, internal controls. What kind of internal control system we have for the number of incidents to increase on the irregular expenditure. My last question for now, the person is on page 53, Development Bank. And actually, there's a loan, well, my second last question, from a company called Credit Transcar from Vidom something. Is that a German company or whatever company? And it's good that we've been able to get a kind of loan from that. Can you just explain that? And lastly, my concern is about the increasing debts from municipalities. On page 11 and on page 99, we note that although there are efforts to bring debt in line, but it's still a matter of concern, Madam Chair, that there's almost 10 billion rand outstanding from local governments as at 31st March 2015. And the public entities also seem to be owing, according to books here, 1.8 billion. Now that is a matter of concern for us, because we also deal with public entities in the committee, and it's something that we will have to look at and assist us from in recovering those monies. Thank you.
Thank you
very much, Chair. I think let me just weigh in on the point that was made by Honourable Singh with regards to people not being able to afford electricity, especially in Nigeria. I'm going to mark a share point using the word used because I don't want to be called order. But the issue here is that I think the challenge primarily, especially in rural areas, is that most municipalities don't even have the resources to be able to implement the free basic alternative energy policy of government. And now then, as soon as this increase takes place, the impression of this would be that something different or something that can be done to protect them. And when it is not done, then you get the impression and the perception that you get in the public and out there. But I think, coming back to the presentation, page three of the presentation, I think there's an error there because it says electrified an additional 1.6, according to the presentation, it's actually 1.6 million if you look at figure. And I think the group CEO read 159,853 homes. But I think the presentation shows 1.6. There's a zero at the end. I think it was I also want to go to the issue about the escalating municipal debt and focus in particular on the Soweto area debt, which I think after the last presentation, after the presentation that after the last, when NESCOM was here the last time around, I remember they said we were going to put steps in place to try to cover some of the money from the residents of Soweto. We then saw in the media that there were disconnections, but it was very confusing. On the one hand, people had the impression that those disconnections are primarily due to the fact that NESCOM wants them to pay whatever they owe to NESCOM. But on the other hand, I think the official statement from NESCOM was that it had to do with load shedding and the host of other issues and maintenance and so on. So I want to be clear as to what has ESCOM done so far as that matter is concerned. Remember, the promise was made in the last meeting presentation to the portfolio committee that we're going to start acting on that. I want to go from... No, I'm saying, if you remember, in the last presentation to this committee, the letter around the municipal debt, the Soweto one, was raised, it was highlighted, and there was commitment from the management that you actually start doing something about the problem, right? Try and collect some of the monies and so on. So what we want now is the report. Has anything been done? If yes, what and how far are you? What steps have you taken to address that problem? Because the general thing at the time was that even people from Soweto must also start seeing us like the rest of us in South Africa. Now when you look at your issue around your net profit on slide number 7, that has come down by about 49% from 7 billion to 2.6% to 2.6 billion rather. Now the next slide on page 8, one would assume that you are saying these are some of the challenges, these are some of the risk factors that actually contributed to the decline in revenue and profit in that year. Now the question is, have you taken steps to protect yourself against those risks in the future? And if yes, what are they? To make sure that you don't have such a sharp decline in revenue again in the future. Now, if you go to, I want to go to page 14, page 19, rather, thank you, brother. The independent power producers, there was a concern, if you remember, GCE last time, that there was a tendency to overlook, especially the Department of Energy, which is not really your fault, but I think you are going to lobby the Department of Energy to try and get those smaller independent power producers who are from rural areas, right, to also get an opportunity to be connected to the grid. I want to give feedback and say, indeed, something was done. I think one was the former Transkei area, which found they were connected to the grid, but I still feel that more needs to be done to make sure that those independent power producers of wind farms, especially in rural areas, are indeed connected to the grid. So I want to comment and say thank you very much for something was done as well. For now, check us in. That is all from my side. Thank you so much.
Honourable Terry.
I think I'm covered on quite a number of issues that I wanted to raise, but just two issues. But before that, I'd wanted to challenge our colleagues from the bank here to join us as we talk about this story of 50 days of non-losses from the media, in the same way we've been doing, one way even negotiating one of the something that we need to talk about. We can't continue to talk about only things that are not going well. And remain silent, as this, I think, is already when there are these good stories, like the 50 days of lawless city. But even if I'm impressed about the work that is being done by ESCOM and Global Foundation, I see here from the presentation, almost 384,000 beneficiaries of people who are being assisted by the foundation in the area of schools, physical colleges, and really, this is a very wonderful story. But the issue that I need to be clarified on, Honorable Papa raised the issue, it's away from that. But I want to take it first and talk about the money really unusual debt in general throughout the country. Last time, obviously, there was a briefing which says there are commitments from some of these municipalities in terms of dealing with these particular issues. if you can just brief in terms of how far are we, what progress has been made in different countries in terms of those commitments that have been made. And that is the issue of the aging infrastructure. What lens can we put in place to deal with this particular challenge? I think that I've said covered quite a number of issues that have been raised. And also, congratulations for the Alpha Yomito point of view.
Thank you.
I just wanted to also to add on the question of the respondents that the two members have spoken to. Chair, I just wanted to know, as much as we have been given the response that said the municipalities are trying, or the arrangement of the municipalities to pay the debt back has started. What I wanted to know, have ESCOM added interest in the year debt, and how much is the interest? Is that interest affordable to those municipalities? If not affordable, what is ESCOM going to do? Because if it's not affordable, I think it's that those municipalities will never finish paying their debt to ESCOM. And also, if in the report it says you still say an escalating municipal debt, does that mean some of the municipalities have defaulted? The arrangement that they have made, that they defaulted in paying back the infrastructure. The other one, Chairperson, is on this small book, this presentation on page 8, there of it. There is a diagram there which I, as a layman on the street, cannot understand. If you say the residential, I think this diagram shows the 100% usage of electricity within the country. So the residential says it's 5.4 MNF. I see the arrow says there's an increase of 5.1% if that is the case. And there's also municipalities that says 42.1%. I just wanted to check everything because I really do not understand some of the mathematical things. The residents that you are speaking of are the residents out of the municipality. How do you calculate this 5.5% of the residents in the 42.5 of municipalities? Because I think it's the municipalities are with the residents are within the municipality usage of electricity. The last one, Chairperson, you know, Chairperson, we always get information that says a project or an entity have energy initiatives in cases in rural areas, but the rural areas which we would want to go and oversight on those projects, we do not know them. Can you come explain which rural areas are they speaking about here? Because if you speak about rural areas, it means you involve my province also. I would like to check which rural and which project are you talking about? If you speak about the development project that we have in FEC College and 7 and 7 development project in rural area, in rural development project, where are these projects? These beneficiaries that you are talking about, where are these beneficiaries? Where are they placed? Are they in the provinces or are they in your in your department as from or there as megawatt in Pretoria? inside the building of
You threw me. I'm still carrying me.
Those are the questions calling from ESCOM. But before you respond or give clarity on those questions, I also wanted to raise some few questions as well. Number one is on slide 29. The graph there on social economic contributions, I see a slight drop from the previous year, the year 2015, in relation to the DEE compliance spending. My question is, this black-owned and black women-owned suppliers, what are we talking about? Are we talking about people who just supply, for instance, maybe you need stationery, they supply stationery, you pay, maybe they need diesel, they supply diesel. I'm raising this at the back of my mind. We are sitting with a serious challenge in relation to employment in this country, particularly the young people. And I will say, now, let's talk about high-level strategic issues in relation to the issues I'm raising here. That do we have a deliberate plan to can build these black-owned companies in relation to maybe to make them to be real entrepreneurs, not necessarily to be suppliers. Now, when we talk about supply, what are we talking about? And if maybe we don't have a deliberate plan to create industrialists, we should start thinking about it. Because we can't spend this much money only to produce to for people who only supply. What happens if maybe we do not need the materials basic supply? What I'm trying to say, do we have any sustainable program to make to produce industrialists in ESCOM? The drop also in terms of the same slide, the drop in terms of the connections, electricity connections, what led to this drop from 201 to 159? We will we'll come the second round.
Let me start by prioritizing and answering the same question about the scheme. The scheme will remember that in terms of orders and law, ESCOM does not determine tariffs. Tariffs are determined by the national regulatory level. And so, in the process of determining tariffs, NASA actually has. Tariffs that are finally arrived at are tariffs that are agreed to and imposed on us by NASA after a process of consulting the public. In fact, the last tariff hearing, ESCOM had asked for an increase of an additional 12.5%, which was declined after public hearing. And in fact, NASA granted us a zero decrease, and this was in May of this year. So I'm not sure, because ESCOM does not determine tariffs. They're determined by NASA in terms of a process, after following a process that is determined by law of public consultation. I'm not sure if Mika thing perhaps wanted to say, because there's no way that ESCOM can fleece customers if ESCOM does not determine tariffs. But Mr. Singh maybe wanted to say NERSA is fleecing customers, or that Mr. Singh will help us to correct the perception that ESCOM does not determine tariffs in the constituency, and that the tariffs are determined by NERSA. And if people have complaints about tariffs, they can go to NERSA. And when we do have public hearings on ESCOM tariffs, people are welcome to make inputs, including to make a presentation to the extent that they are intrigued.
if it is so. Let me ask Mr. Mungin Dogolo to talk about the energy losses that we are experiencing in the city.
Thank you, CE, and good morning, Chair and members. Energy losses are made up of two parts. There is the technical losses, we call them, because when electricity flows through the conductor, through natural flow, there are losses because there's friction and you get heat, and that heat is actually using energy. So in any system, you'll have between 4 to 6% of technical load losses. Even a transformer, even if it's not supplying a customer, because the transformation and flow of energy inside transformer, there would be some technical losses. So the first part of losses is your technical losses, 4 to 6%. Then there's what we call non-technical losses, which makes up the difference to 8.8%. Couple of reasons for non-technical losses. One, which is well known, is theft, where people connect themselves illegally. Second one is that meters are mechanical devices. Sometimes they break, and between the time that you identify that the meter is broken and you replace it, you would actually incur some losses. So there's broken meters. There's also well known in South Africa unelectrified areas, which is why we're still pushing electrification so that everyone has got electricity. Communities that are staying in close proximity to areas that are electrified, they tend to go and steal that electricity from the electrified areas, or steal them from the street lights or from the meters. All of that stealing also contributes to your non-technical losses. So in short, that's the component. Technical, 46%, and then non-technical, made up of all the reasons that I've given.
So on the quality of coal, we have, before we put coal into our boilers and generators, we check the quality and we send this coal to several laboratories all over the country. And these laboratories then give us a report on the quality of coal. In some instances, the coal is not found to be of good quality before it goes into our generators, because the sample is taken and tested. In certain instances, there have been disputes about the testing methodologies of the laboratories and whether or not the results that are coming out of the laboratories are correct. And in those instances, we have sent coal to the South African Bureau of Standards. So we do take reasonable steps to make sure that the coal that goes into our machine is of the correct quality, because it is all tested through the independent laboratories. Eskom used to have its own laboratories, and they were closed down and privatized. We are thinking of perhaps reviving some of them and having some of the internal capacity in the testing of coal. The penalties for delays, I will ask the Global Delegates Capital and Masan to talk about if there are any penalties that will be levied for the delay.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we do enforce the contract penalties on all the companies that do not meet the deadlines or do not perform. We enforce the delay directive, and we also pull the bonds when necessary. In certain instances, Madam Chair, we also step in. As you know, that at some stage we had to usually terminate one of the control and instrumentation contract of ASTOM. The reason we do that, we normally look at the forecast on our date that we want to meet. If the productivity does not meet our projection, then we normally step in. In certain instances where the contractors are not giving us the quality that we want to see, we take it further to a point that we deal with the non-performance. In certain instances, we go to a point where we even lay criminal charges to the individuals involved in different companies if we find that there was a misbehavior that was not acceptable. In a nutshell, our contracts that we pay do allow us to enforce, and we also use our right to step in if our deadline are jeopardized. So moving forward, we'll be making sure that the contractors meet their deadline. If they don't, all the above that I've mentioned will be enforced as well.
Chair, on the question of ICPs, we have reported on the number of ICPs and the amount of electricity that the ICPs are providing. And I think a subsequent question was whether ESCOM will be participating in renewables. And the answer is yes, we will be participating in renewables. In fact, at the moment, we are in discussion with the Department of Energy to see if we can get a license for operating solar farm in the Northern Cape. But that is subject to being granted a license by NERSA. There was something mentioned about nuclear, but I'm not sure what, but if I can just add an unsolicited comment, and that is that we do not think that it is possible to continue with an energy mix in South Africa that is with nuclear. Quebec is serving us very well. In fact, it is providing from the generation mix the cheapest operating cost at the moment to the entire generation mix. And we think that a nuclear program is feasible in South Africa because nuclear plants typically have a life of beyond 60 years and the payback period, irrespective of what the amount is, or typically is about 20 years. So it is feasible to fund and operate a nuclear, several nuclear plants in South Africa. And in fact, it is urgent for it to do so. Chair, we have not had load shedding and we have also reduced the request for load reductions from the private sector and in fact in line with minimal load shedding, the load reductions have also been the minimal, which is requests from the private sector and companies to reduce the load when we do run into trouble with the generation of electricity, but that those have been in recent times the minimum. During the reporting period, of course, load reduction as well as load shedding was very high, but subsequent after the, let me say after July this year, load reductions as well as load shedding have been minimal as we have reported. On the fruitless and wasteful expenditure in ECOM, I think the team will talk about this.
Thank you, Ryan. Madam Chief, on page 109 of the annual report, you will find an analysis of both fruitless and wasteful as well as energy expenditure. Madam Chair, we do regret to report that there has been an increase in the incidence of fruitless and wasteful as well as energy expenditure. But that is the direct result of the fact that management has taken a concerted effort to look at improvement in the control environment as well as stepping up the issue around fraud and corruption and those type of initiatives. In direct response to this increase, which we believe is unacceptable, we have listed on slide 32, which I put up, all of the initiatives that ESCOM is currently embarking on to be in a position to actually curb this unacceptable trend that we found in the incidents of PFMA violation as it relates to produce and wasteful as well as irregular expenditure. And on a positive note, you will also see that on page 109 that the number of incidences that relate to criminal misconduct has reduced from about 7,000 odd to about 5,500 odd. So on the positive side, there is some light at the end of the tunnel as it relates to PFMA compliance, as it relates to criminal misconduct. And Chair, on the new age issue, again on page 109 of the annual report, you will find that the new age issue is the amount of formulae that was regarded as irregular expenditure, not fruitless and wasteful. And the reason the audit has considered it irregular was relating to the authority related to the official that engaged that contracted and awarded that contract. That's what subsequently ratified and condoned by the Board of Directors. So Manager, that relates to the issues around PFMA irregularities or contraventions in terms of the funds.
Chair, the incident took place during the financial year and was ratified during the financial year, which was quite odd for us that the auditors said it needed to be reported, but the amount of 4 million that was entered into contract that had been subsequently condoned and it was reported the auditors insisted on reporting it. The question there. Roads to rail benefit not just Eskom but the whole country, reduces the number of trucks on the road, as well as provides Eskom a cheaper form of the transportation of coal to power stations. We have been increasing the amount of rail that has amount of rail coal to Eskom. Our sister organization, Transnet Jefferson, has been performing exceptionally well in the area, as they may have reported to you in this committee, and we hope to continue to have a beneficial relationship with Transnet on this matter. You will have noticed, Madam Chair, that Transnet has bought additional locomotives and wagons in terms of their market demand strategy, and part of those locomotives and wagons are going to make it possible for us to increase the transportation of coal on rail. The update on the suspensions, Chairperson, 4 cents were suspended. 3 of them have subsequently resigned from ESCOM, and their resignations were accepted by the board, and one of them has been reinstated. Mr. Koko has been reinstated and is now working at ESCOM. And that is the update on the suspensions. The CFO has spoken about regular expenditure. I can just add that you will notice that the regular expenditure relates to the period 1st April 2014 to the 31st of March 2015, and the fair to the CFO who only came to ESCOM in September 2015, I can assure the committee that he is subsequently working very hard to make sure that this regular expenditure is not treated in the next financial year. In the next reporting period.
Madam Chair, in terms of the comment from Honourable Thing around the German company that provided the loan, it's actually not a German bank, it's really the HEMI, which is the German Export Credit Agency in Germany. We also have US credit export agencies as well. We've got JBIC as well that provides some sort of financial support to the ESCOM as well. So it's a combination of ECAs from each of the various international companies, foreign companies, sorry, as well as developing financial institutions.
Chair, the increase in debt from municipalities happened between the period 2014 to the 31st of March 2015, and post this reporting period, it has been coming down. And in fact, the committee will remember that ESCOM had resorted to we were supposed to have switched off quite a number of municipalities by June of this year, which is after the reporting period. That did not happen because we then entered into agreement with the municipalities that were in default, and all of them are honoring the agreement that has subsequently been entered, and that debt for the municipalities is coming down. If I can talk about Soweto, because it is asked later on, our focus in Soweto at the moment is the installation of prepaid meters. And that is what we are doing, we are working and consulting with the committee. I believe there is a petition that has been sent to Parliament. And perhaps let me speak, let me allow Ayanda Noah to talk about it, because she is the person responsible for the installation of prepaid meters in Soweto, and elsewhere in the country, including Zanzibar and Midrand.
Chairman, thank you very much, and to the honourable members as well. As the chief has already said, in Soweto we have embarked on the conversion process. In other words, looking at installing what we call the green boxes. The green boxes are basically speed metering. Speed metering is a meter that allows you not to tamper with the meter. So what you do is you have an active part that is put in a green box, and that's why it's called green box, and it's put in the pavement, and then the part that either is prepaid or is conventional is then sitting in your house so that you can buy your prepaid tokens and then enter, so you can actually see how much you're consuming. So what we have done now is, as you know, Soweto has different townships. We have completed Shawelo, which was quite a few years back, I think in about 2007. We completed about 5,000 houses there. And right now we are looking at installing another 34,000 prepaid. We'll start with prepaid, either conventional or prepaid, and then later on we convert as we move on into the different townships. You are also aware that there have been some protests as a result of the installation. We have engaged the communities, and we, in some communities, in fact, have written us petitions saying we must come in and install the green boxes. So those areas we are prioritizing. And then the other part that we are looking at is conversion of prepaid in Sandton and Midrand. We have concluded the procurement process. We are looking at about 35,000 houses in those two areas. And we should be ready to install in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We should be ready to roll out about 1,000 meters. And we're looking at finishing about 5,000 by the end of this financial year. So there is progress in terms of the conversion to prepaid. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the issue of public entities owing 1.3 billion is also being addressed with the government, the respective department, and I think that this amount is also coming down post-balance sheet, so post the 5th of, sorry, the 5th of March. I'd also like to talk about steps to mitigate the drop in revenue that happened in the last year.
Again, NMCF to you. Yes, the ESCOM has got 100% of its revenue that's basically regulated. So to that extent, there's very little, let's say, mitigating measures that it could actually implement in terms of being able to prevent a reduction in revenue. One of the inherent mechanisms that's available to us is actually part of the regulatory mechanism or process or the methodology that NASA has allowed us, and this is called the Revenue Clearing Account, or the RCA process, which effectively allows you to claim certain differences between actual expenditure incurred and the revenue projections compared to what was actually allowed in the MRTE process. So that process we are currently undertaking with NASA, post the unsuccessful selective reopen process that we engaged with NASA. We hope that that process will be complete next quarter, and we will then follow another RDA process in the year thereafter.
You can also talk about interest on debt for sure.
Thank you. Interest view on unit debt, Madam Chair, is a contractual one. Our relationship with our customers is regulated through a contract that is signed between us and the customer. In that contract, it basically says that you need to pay your electric bill by a certain date. Should you not pay by that date, you then incur interest, and the interest rate varies from customer to customer. In terms of not being able to levy this interest rate share, it also is a issue of one, compliance to the contract that's in place, and secondly, it relates to being able to treat pretty much all of our customers in the same way and manner, which also is like a competition issue in terms of the Competition Act, in terms of how we actually treat all of our customers. So that's an issue that we're dealing with currently, Madam Chair, in terms of some of the issues that we've been getting back from the municipalities in terms of looking at the rate at which we levy those charges, the base from which we levy the charges, and so on. So we are engaging with National Treasury as well as the Children's Department in that sense.
In terms of the ICTs that have been connected, we must apologize to the member if there is a zero that was added there. The correct number is 159,000. That is the correct presentation, but we do apologize for the mistake that happened in the copy that the member received. Aging infrastructure, maybe I can ask Mr. Koko and Dr. Generation to talk about aging infrastructure.
I did say that our average age is 34 years old, but we've spent 53 billion rands of capital, and the split between the new build and enhancement of the aging fleet is around 50%. And generally, that's where the money that we spend towards life extensions of our aging fleet. The first of our plans to retire will be in 2023. 2023. And what now doing is to get, we are now heavily involved in a study that says what do we do with our assets that are reaching retirement age. And what is beginning to emerge is that life extensions post-retirement age is a feasible option, and that's what we have to explore now.
Thank you. And we must also apologize if this slide caused confusion, but this slide actually refers to ESCOM customers. So among ESCOM customers, we have residential, which is direct residential, which is people that have their houses and their accounts with ESCOM directly. And in certain instances, the municipality is an ESCOM customer and not the residents behind. So we're not split between total residents as in consumers of ESCOM, but we're talking about the customers of ESCOM. And so the split is in terms of customer type rather than the actual consumers of electricity. The project in rural areas, we actually have a slide that shows the activities of the foundation it's not in the presentation. That shows the activities in the different provinces, and we can provide it to the members to show where how much is spent and in which areas of the different provinces. I think we decided not to print this because we were worried about the other members from other provinces will say, what about my province and so on. But we do have the details of how much was spent in each province. The slide that we showed about our activities and provinces that was presented here is the electricity connection. And I'm happy to report that the highest number of electricity connections were in the border, followed by Eastern Cape, and then the rest of South Africa. But the Mpopo and Eastern Cape were the highest number of connections. This is probably because the Mpopo and the Eastern Cape are probably the border provinces disconnected from all the provinces. And Northern Cape also had a very high number of connections relative to the population of Northern Cape. The BE compliance spending, this is BE spending in terms of the quotes. But so we report how much of our spending was BE spending in terms of the quotes. But you remember that in terms of the quotes, a company is considered to be BE compliant when it has 26% BE ownership, or when it procures from other BE companies to a certain extent. So these are not necessarily blank companies in terms of the codes. So you find that the company with 50% BE ownership is compliant and is reported here as us having spent money on a BE company. And we do not distinguish the extent to which the company was being compliant. And I think this the fact that they own the entity, especially they are spending so much money on BE compliant companies, and yet we do not see BE necessarily is actually the transition that has led to DTI to talk about the revision of codes and to make them more stringent. And that is a process that we are waiting for. So it is, in essence, the policy matter, which we at ESCOM also need to guide as to how we should proceed to ensure that we have complied with the law and the DTI codes in Spain. Just that those codes are, I think a lot of people are not happy with them, especially the tech business community. I think that those codes are the resource and they are not real benefits that come to them, even though in terms of the book they are compliant with them. I think perhaps Chairperson is correct. We should look at ways of how ESCOM can contribute to the development of black industries in our new green progress. And I think it's a challenge that we as ESCOM should take and see how we can, in our in our capital spend activity, specifically contribute to the creation of the industrial. Ayanda, would you like to talk about the reason for the reduction in connections between 2014 and 2015?
Thank you again, Chairman. If I look at electrification generally, it's driven by the IDP process. So in other words, we talk to the municipalities and the contracts in terms of how many connections that we'll do, working together with the DOE. What does happen is you'll find that the connections that we have now are in deep rural areas. So we have to still put the infrastructure, the substations, the lines, and so on. So what you find is that in a particular year, which is what happened also last year, we had a lot of substations and other infrastructure that was built, and then connections then should follow the following year. So as you move deeper into the rural area, that is the nature of the pattern. So you may not find that the numbers necessarily will be, you know, a constant number that is going up, although we are striving to get, you know, to the 200,000 numbers that we had in the past. But that is really the nature of electrification. And again, the three provinces that we focus on because of the backlog that we have is Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. So those are the big three that we have to still get the infrastructure on the ground before we can really realize the connection.
Thank you very much for the answers. Honourable members, I don't know if you still have some follow-up. I also have one. Honourable Singh will follow up after this one. Honourable Singh spoke about suspension of officials in the officials in ESCOM. And we understand the answers given, but you know, the general view in the survey which was conducted, it says South Africans, we are very soft on corruption, and the chief gave the explanation to say some officials left, resigned, and then we are left with one. When he was asking, we were hoping to get maybe some sense of what happened, not even in detail. Were there any wrong findings on the part of the officials? Those who left, if there was nothing wrong or if there was something wrong they had done, what are the measures to pursue them? And maybe if it's in relation to fiscal of ESCOM, do we have recovery mechanisms? Or to have that kind of information so that we can send a strong message to say we are not soft on corruption. This is what we are being blamed for, that we are just soft on corruption. People do, and then when they realize they are in a corner, they resign and then go and apply for a job in one of the departments or somewhere else. So it will help us to have that understanding.
Chairperson. The original intent was to put aside those executives who could have an impact on the elicitation of information from their sections. There was no formal charge against each one of them. The minister complained about the issue of generation, the financial sustainability, and generally the planning around load shedding and so on. That's what the investigation focused on. Find that information. It was not geared to prove any wrongdoing on the part of the executives. Now, we have had the report. It's with this shareholder. And the report has addressed issues which are being addressed, for instance, through the load shedding management, outages management, the way we are raising debt, our borrowing targets, and so on. All that, those weaknesses are being addressed already. So there was nothing wrongdoing found in any of the evidence.
even those who resigned, it was clear in our statement that if there was any wrongdoing found, it will not be preempted by the resignations.
Thank you for that explanation. Thank you. We understand. Honorable Singh, you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, for following up on that question, because that's certainly the impression we got. Because if you look at page 11, it says, the chairman announced suspension of two executive directors and two group executives following a board resolution to commission an independent inquiry on the current status of the business and its challenges. The independent inquiry will focus on the following: poor performance of the generation plant asset, which Dr. Kumar has referred to, delay in bringing new generation capacity online, escalating costs of primary energy, and cash flow challenges. So we will await that report, which they say is with the shareholders as a committee. We haven't had access to that report. But I think, like you, Jefferson, our impression was that it was more than just the load shedding issue that warranted these four people being suspended in the manner that they were suspended. Because, you know, Jay, so thank you for that. I just want to ask on the environmental compliance. I note there that the Department of Environment has given you a bit of a lifeline until 2025 to meet minimum emission standards, and you have to retrofit. There's going to be a retrofit program that's going to cost about 134 billion rand. Now, is provision being made for the 134 billion rand for this program to be continued until 2025? That's one of the concerns. And the next follow-up, Chairperson, is on the new HIF. I appreciate the answer. It was corrected here and it was approved. But you're still continuing with new age program and sponsoring. Because like I said last week, I saw that sponsored by ESCO. Unless they were incorrect in announcing that it was sponsored by ESCO, because I watched that program. But can you just tell us whether the contract is still in place and for how long? And then lastly, I must just make a comment that thankfully we've got a regulating authority like NESA, because it acted as a cushion on behalf of the public and those that required the increase, because the reduced increase was approved the last time. Thank you.
Any other questions? Or members?
No, just Chair, I think the question that you have posed and the chairperson of the board has responded well, and maybe giving the nation another version and perception as it pertains to the term suspension. If you are suspended, it's a known fact that you are wrong, you have done wrong. So I'm sure it teaches us a lesson to say if one in the process of being suspended decides to leave, it's not on the beat, it's an admission of guilty, or there was something wrong, but it means that this question is catechizing in other state-owned enterprises and departments, women, as public representatives, make use of that brilliant and understanding, because it's brilliant to want to know if one is not there. Because really, it was not at the back of our minds that when one was suspended and decided to leave, there is no ulterior motive. Because here we are dealing with heads of family, we are dealing with human beings whose integrity have to be protected. So now we might be able to say, no, there was nothing that purported that so-and-so did came wrong to him, not necessarily in ESCOM, because this suspension, you know, even if we will resist to be suspended, if the AAC decides to suspend me, it doesn't say I am wrong, but something needs to be checked upon me in my absence from my position. I mean, I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Do you see the follow-up question?
Yes, sir. It's actually not a follow-up question, Chair. It's to say on that 159,853 that drop, I'm very happy with that response, actually, because, you know, what politicians, when you look at such figures, we think maybe there, a very sophisticated demand management strategy. We've got more connections in putting pressure on the country. So we're going to talk to you about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Vishnu. This brings us to the end of this interaction with our colleagues from ESCOM. department, you have anything to say?
I think one question from Honorable Mazon, the director of the department, in terms of what we are doing to encourage IPP connections. I think the white paper on energy is very clear in terms of over time migrating to a 70% split in terms of generation between IPP and ESCOM. And I think there is still equal commitment that we will migrate to a 70% generation split as agreed in the white paper. However, that is how quickly we migrate to what that process will be determined by the sort of demand and economic growth that we see in the country, and I hope to clarify that. And on the electrification, if I can add as well, is that we must also anticipate that as we move towards universal access, the numbers will start to taper down. Because with 85%, we will get to universal access, I think it's 2025, I am clarify. But the numbers will start to taper down, and we will only be left with backwards that we would need to do. And then just lastly on municipal aid, I thought I should clarify as well that, you know, as much as we are pursuing trying to get municipalities to pay the amount owed to ESCOM, there are some serious socio-political issues that we need to deal with in terms of municipalities that relate to the municipality's own ability to administer basic electricity as determined by the national treasury, structural issues in terms of municipalities' own abilities to manage electricity infrastructure. And this affects the last mile of delivery of electricity in terms of municipalities' abilities to be able to invest in the infrastructure that is required to be able to deliver electricity. And these are some of the conversations that we are having with DCOC in terms of ensuring that municipalities can deliver basic services. So it's not just an issue of payment, there are some structural issues that also need to be dealt with. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Members. I think it was a very productive interaction. We look forward to this type of continuing cooperation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lastly, from our side, the committee, now that we have leadership in the FDAC level at ESCOM, we hope that we will see more efficiencies, we will see more stability, and also we'll see progress and improvement in relation to how we deal with issues of procurement. And seated here as lay people, we used to have this perception that there's so much looting at the port. So much looting, the place is just bleeding. And the pit is open, anyone can just go and grab. So we are very confident to say the leadership which is here will be able to put those processes, in particular the procurement processes and procedures in place in relation to the concerns raised by AG. So that next year when we come, we shall have minimized those issues which AG has raised. And we wish you good luck. And because this is our last interaction with yourself, have a very lovely Christmas and holiday spent with your family, and then be safe, and then we'll meet next year in February. Thank you very much, and fly safely back to your home.